Hey all you pet stylists, you found the Groom Pod. Welcome to our virtual salon. My name is Susie and I'm your host. I'm a mobile groomer from Seattle, Washington, and anyone who knows me will tell you I love to talk, especially about my job. One of my favorite people to talk to is my friend and mentor and star of the show from Tucson, Arizona, and groomblog.blogspot.com, Miss Barbara Bird.
Hello, groomers. Hi, Susie.
What's up? Hi, Barbara. Hi, groomers. Welcome to the 14th episode of the Groom Pod. I'd like to remind you to join us on our Facebook discussion group. Just search The Groom Pod on Facebook. You can also find us on Stitcher and iTunes. You can find our website at thegroompod.com. You can find Barbara's blog at groomblog.blogspot.com and Barbara's shopping site at shop.beaver.biz. Our emails are Susie, S-U-S-Y, at thegroompod.com and Barbara at thegroompod.com. What's new this week? Brought to you by Barbara's shopping site. Shop for specialty grooming items at www.shop.beaver.biz. Shop with a groomer, it's good karma. Well, how was your week?
Well, I had a really exciting week because, you know, last week I only groomed one day, and so I had to make up for it this week. Boy, it was hard.
Wow, turning it out.
Yeah, but we had some new toys to play with. And that
new toys
made it very, really interesting and much more fun. And I have at last got a 5-in-1 trimmer on my table that I can trust, that's doing the job it's supposed to do, that I'm not cursing it all day long. It's
what
the wall. Susie, it's the Wall Figura, F-I-G-U-R-A, Figura trimmer. It's new to the Wall line.
What's it look like? Is it big? Is it small?
No, it's, you know, it's a small size. It's not a full-size clipper. It's a trimmer.
How is it compared to the Brevera?
Okay, everybody asked me that question, and I've only used the Brevera a little bit, and that was a couple of years ago, but it's more, the body shape is more ergonomic. It's got a slight curve to the front to back area, so, and then it also has a waistline, so it fits in your hand really well. It's very well balanced. You can flip it, you know, if you got a clip upside down, do tummies or something, and it's really easy in your hands. It's really comfortable. It's lightweight, and it's got a good deal of power. I think it has a little bit more power, I mean, than the Brevera. And it's more ergonomic, it's a little bit cheaper, it fits like all the wall. I got it along with the set of Snap-on combs that fit the wall 5-in-1 trimmers. I was delighted to hear that those combs would fit this trimmer, and boy, is that a good system. I'm just doing almost all my work with the Figura and the comb, Snap-on combs, and hardly touching my large clippers at all, which is real good for my old hand.
Okay, I've got those same Snap-on combs and I love them, but what I find is that those 5-in-1 blades, I don't know what I'm doing wrong with them, but I use them for a little while and then they start grabbing hair. Do you have any tips for that? Is it just time for a new blade at that point?
Yeah, but you know, you can get those sharpened. A lot of sharpeners are able to sharpen those now. You don't get a whole lot of sharpenings out of them like you might with your regular blades, but you can get them sharpened once or twice. And, you know.
I hear if you send them back to Wall, they'll sharpen them as well.
Well, good.
Somebody told me their idea of sharpening them is taking them in the back and then giving you a new blade. I don't know if that's true, but I've heard that rumor.
Yeah, well, maybe they just sharpen them like new, you know, like, I don't know, but, so I don't think you need to dispose of them, right away. And just like, I mean, you know, it's all, Susie, it's all cheap Chinese stuff, you know, and it just doesn't have the kind of lifespan that our old German-made tools but those German-made tools would be costing us three times as much now because of labor costs. And so there's a trade-off.
So when you're using those Snap-on combs on that trimmer, what setting are you using the blade on?
Usually I use it on the 15.
Okay.
You know, and
that's
and
my that, problem.
Yeah, I'm not using it on the 30 or on the really ultra fine. I'm using it on the 15, and I'm oiling the blade daily, not between every groom, but daily.
That's one of those blades I forget to oil. I oil my other blades, but then I forget.
No, see, and I think brushing and oil, brushing out the blade too, because the, you know, the hair will collect between the comb and the blade. It's just the nature of those Snap-on combs that they're going to collect hair, and you're going to have to slip the Snap-on off and brush out the hair. And so when you tap out the hair from the comb, might as well just brush off the hair from the blade too. Brushing blades, I think, really helps increase their lifespan.
Well, that's a really big clue right there is, maybe I'm not oiling and or brushing it out, but you make me feel a lot better to know that that hair is going to collect up underneath that Snap-on comb, because I figured I was probably misfitting them or doing something wrong, because I do collect up a fair amount of hair in there after, you know, after I've worked with it for a few minutes.
I think it's just integral. I think it happens to everybody.
Huh. See, this is beneficial. I just learned that. I just feel better about my grooming every time I talk to you. Okay, so I'm going to have to get one of those, because I was looking for a replacement for my Brevera because it's not holding a charge very well anymore. So this might be a solution to that. What else did you get? I know you got other stuff too.
Well, I also got to try out some new grooming loops, both neck loops and a new grooming rear loop system from a company that's new to our industry. It's a husband-wife company called Alpha Grooming Products. And the thing about these items is that they're made with a rubberized, it's not a fabric, it's a rubberized material, not a nylon fabric. And I think the neck loops are like cables that are encased with this rubberized material. So the neck loops are a little bit heavier than what we're used to using, but oh my God, do they work well. One of the secrets of it's an invention or an innovation or evolution in these products is that the clasp where you snap it to your pole or whatever are swiveled.
Oh, that's nice.
So I can put the dog in the neck loop and the rear end suspension and move him 360 degrees and not twist up the loops. It's really nice. And, you know, I just wonder, what am I liking here so much? And it was that movement that happens, and it's just built into their snaps. It's all swivel attached, so that's cool.
Do they have several sizes?
I don't know if they have several sizes. They have different colors.
No, I like that.
Blue, black, and pink, I think. The rear end was a blue strap. I picked blue because it goes with my blue tabletop and my floor, and everything around my table is blue. The flank strap is a solid piece, and it has two ends, so you can undo one end, and it has kind of a quick release type snap. There again, it swivels, and you can quick release either.
Good quality.
Yeah, that's big. It's about an inch to an inch and a half wide. I think it's about an inch wide, heavy rubberized material. The dogs are not going to be able to chomp these loops in half like they can our nylon loops. They're gonna last forever. I think they're very antibacterial.
Okay, I am my own worst loop enemy, and it's not the dogs chomping on the loops, but it's me getting the clipper in the loop. So maybe this would be a better loop for me.
Yeah. Well, Maybe I'll send you this loop and you can try it out, but I'm going to want you to send it back.
Or I could just buy one.
Okay.
That's a good idea.
So anyway, I think this company is on to something. I'm into supporting a new company at our party. So far, I really like their product.
Well, I think that's pretty cool. I know you have one more little sneaky thing that somebody sent you to test out.
I got to play with the Utsumi comb, and nobody sent it. This one isn't a gift, but my friend Crystal Dunn, who works at my shop as an independent on days when I'm not there, and we can talk about that model on another time.
Ooh, good idea.
It's working out. Anyway, she went to Pasadena, and so the following week I go in to groom, and here's this really cool looking comb with a little note on the box. Try me, you know, and I said, okay. And
it's, ooh, unseen advantage to having somebody else in your shop.
Yeah. And now she's got to try out the Segura trimmer too. So, I mean, it works back and forth. Well, let me tell you about the Utsumi comb. This is the half moon comb that is actually small on the two ends and then longer tines in the middle.
And so it looks like a smile.
Yeah. It's straight on the spine. The tines are shorter and longer, and so I don't know if I would call it like a smile. But anyway, it's a half moon shape. You can find it online. It's really neat. And I had seen some kind of raves about it. It's a really pricey tool. It costs anywhere from $60 to $80 for this comb. I would never spend $80 for a comb. Well, I thought I would never spend $300 for a pair of shears either. But sometimes those pricier tools have distinct advantages. And I'll be dang. The first time I used the comb was on a little Bichon mix, maybe Bichon Maltese. She just looks like a tiny Bichon, and she's got a good coat. And I'm doing her in sort of a little Asian style face. And this comb is touted as the balm for Asian style faces. So I combed up her little mustache with this comb, and sure enough, it fluffed it up really nice. But I thought, well, what's the difference between this comb and I also have a small fine Chris Christensen face comb, short pins, and I tried that comb, and it also did a nice job fluffing up her face. And I also have a fine to ultra fine Teflon coated Greyhound style comb that I keep hiding from my bathers because I find bathers using that very fine comb to comb out tangles, and I think that's a big mistake. And it's more painful on the dog to use a fine comb should be used for finishing after other combs have been used to do the comb out. That's my, and this Utsumi comb is marketed as a finishing tool. It's not your comb out comb. It's your fluff up for scissoring to get a better fluff out. And it set the hair up for scissoring. And at first I thought my other combs were just as good. The second day I used the Utsumi, I used it on my Bedlington Terrier that I've been grooming for years. And by golly, that headpiece came out so nice. Susie, I've never seen the hair look that good. And the hair on the sides of the face, you scissor that hair really short. And the short end of that Utsumi fluffed that hair out again and again. That dog went out with the best looking head I've ever done on him. And I'm in love with a comb now.
So I think spending the big bucks on a comb is not such a bad idea.
Well, I remember, if you're doing, and it depends on what kind of work you're committed to putting out. You know, it's not, I mean, good enough is good enough. You don't need this comb. If you're basically doing little pet trims, good enough. But if you're competing, if you're certifying, if you're putting out scissored trims that you're marketing as better, best? If you're into doing your best ever work on a regular basis, then this is a tool that you're going to use more.
When do you use the long tines? When do you use the middle of the comb?
When you're fluffing out the whole top of the head on the Bedlington Terrier or on the Maltese, when you know you just go for the middle and you use it kind of like you would use the end of a regular comb. So when you're lifting and pulling up the hair to set the hair up for scissoring, you use the middle of the comb. When you're working around the face and in the tinier areas, you use the smaller ends. And we've talked about this comb some on Facebook, and other groomers have. Utsumi also makes a regular shaped comb. And some groomers like that one even better.
Well, that's what I'm wondering, because when I think about the way I use a comb, I'm mostly using the last 3 or 4 inches of the comb. I rarely use the center of the comb. So the design caught me by surprise a little bit because of the way it's shaped, and I was just wondering how easy it is to use that center of the comb.
Yeah, well, in this particular comb, I've wondered that too, because like Ashley Craig has a comb that has extra wide, wide in the middle, and then fine on the end, so it has 3 sizes of tines. Or 3, you know, intervals of tines on it. And I often wondered, how in the world would you ever use the middle of that comb? On this comb, it's easier to use the middle because the middle is longer than the side. So you just hold it and you just use that part of the comb. And the other thing about this comb is that it's small. It's like 7 inches. And it's extremely lightweight. It's really light on the hands, which, again, is good for me. It's just an option. And the price was a big stop sign for me at first, and I resisted liking it, but the comb won me over.
Yeah, I hate that expensive taste thing. Hey, another new product that's out there is from Randy at Precision Sharp, and it is a bent shank curved shear. And I'm not exactly sure what to use it for. All I know is I've got to have it.
Probably,
what would I use that?
Well, I think you would use that for, use that for like around the bottom of the feet. You would use bent shanks, straight shears were very popular in the old days, in the days gone by. Before some of the newer offset handle scissors were created. So they were a way to, they're very good at straight lines around the bottom of the dog. And in this case, we got curved lines around the bottom of the dog. So when you're working near your table, bent shanks are good. Some people just like the bent shank because it gives you more control, because it actually seems, in a way, it shortens the distance between the handle and the blades because of the bend. So it kind of gives you better control of your scissors. I would be interested in trying that. Yeah, a review to happen.
Yes, review in the future. Speaking of reviews, I'll just say right here and now that we're going to move the show schedule to the end of the show, so it's not quite so repetitive. If you want to hear it, just hang on till the end of the show and we'll review the show schedule. There was something else I wanted to say, but now I've completely forgotten it, so we'll just move on.
Okay.
Ready, groomers? Here comes our first appointment. Our first appointment today, we're going to talk about over-the-table support systems. And by this, I'm talking about the brand name Lips system by Hanvi Specialty Engineering, or I know that Romani has an over-the-top full-table support. And it's a grooming arm, but it goes over the whole table. I call it my grooming jungle gym. When people come in and look in my grooming trailer, I say, there's my grooming jungle gym, and I can actually hang your dog up there in a hammock, and they can take a little bit of a nap while I do their feet. And people think that's pretty clever. Do you use a lip system?
I wouldn't be without one. I do. I have lip systems on both of my major tables.
Yeah, I find it's a complete... I couldn't live without it. I've never groomed without it. The only time I groom without it is when I'm in the competition ring doing a rescue-type competition, and I hate the single grooming arm. It's just not, it's not even the same kind of a thing. So this is basically, there's a pipe fitting on the base of your table, and then the pipe screws into it, and then in sections over the top, and then screws in back down on the other side. And all the way along are eyelets or eye bolts. And you take chains with little swivel hooks on them, and you hook them up in the eye bolts, and it gives you an unlimited adjustable grooming support system. And Curtis Hanvey always advertises it as, he's not a heavy guy, but he's kind of a tall guy. He weighs about, I think he says, 165 pounds or something like that. And he can actually hang from the bottom of the lip system. So you can support a pretty heavy dog in it. And it comes with quite a bit of accessories that make it easier. And we're talking about grooming special needs dogs. And for special needs dogs, I cannot imagine ever grooming without a lip system. Do you use any of the accessories?
Well, I use the three-piece hip strap almost daily. And I use now the new Alpha Grooming Products rear end support. And the difference is that the Hanvey hip strap has a third piece that extends from underneath the dog to the rear pole of the lip system. So it not only holds the dog, keeps the dog from sitting, but it keeps the dog from moving side to side as well.
And I use that on almost every dog too.
I know, and the only downside of the over-the-table support system is that some dogs will really hang on that front pole. They'll really use the front pole to keep you from like grooming their shoulder. So sometimes it takes a little while getting used to having a front pole, but the overall advantages, I think, far outweigh the disadvantages. There are some over-the-table systems that have adjustable poles, so you move the poles, slide the poles up and down to change the size. I think that's kind of time-consuming and maybe a little less secure. I like my high, it's high enough to go over even the largest dogs that I groom, the Hanvey system, the lips. You know, I just use the chains. People get put off by the links.
Oh, they're so great, though.
I know they're so great, but, you know, I had a groomer that I taught to groom in a lip system, and she went, and then she left me, and she went to work at another place, and they set her up at a table that was kind of near their front door. They would not let her use a lip system because they thought it looked medieval, like medieval torture, because of the straps and chains. Get over it. And I know, I mean, I've had other groomers that have like put flowered covers over their chains, and
that's just silly.
It's silly. It's a system. It's a professional system for supporting and safety of the pet.
Yes.
And you know, actually when I bought my first lip system, I sent out a newsletter to veterinarians saying that I had this new support system where I could support the rear ends of older or disabled pets. And I marketed the crap out of it as an advantage of my salon and my handling ability. You just don't have to go there about the medieval torture device thing.
That's why I call it a jungle gym. I think it's a little bit more fun.
Yeah, yeah.
A very handy accessory, actually my very favorite accessory, I think, that comes available with the lip system that Curtis has, is the table divider. And what it is it's a vinyl piece of It's just a strip of vinyl, and it attaches on either end of the lips, and it splits your table in half. So for the small dogs, they can't back away from you. You don't have to lean over them, you know, lean over to the back of the table to work with them. I love the table divider.
Yeah, I keep my table divider actually hooked up to my table, but I just keep it tucked over the backside, so it's really invisible most of the time. But, you know, I groom sitting down, and when you groom sitting down, having dogs move to the far corner of the table is a real problem because it's harder on your body to reposition them always. So I use that on small dogs that are going to go to the furthest corner and try to get away from me. And sometimes you can use the table divider and you don't need to use a rear end support, although the rear end support is a terrific safety feature. I think we covered this in another podcast where we said you want a three-point system.
Connection.
Yes. Yeah. Yep. To keep so that if the dog is in the rear end support and they move off the table, they just swing back on.
For the dogs that hug the front post that you were talking about, yeah. I will, instead of attaching the loop to the front post, I will attach the T-strap to the back post. And then they can't get up to the front post, and that helps me a little bit with that.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
There's just so many ways to adjust and accommodate the dogs you're working on, and especially if you have dogs with some disability like we're going to talk about in the at the table section. It's just such a great handy accessory to have. Chuck from Groomer's Helper has that adjustable, the loop adjuster, that if you use that in combination with the chains and everything else, you've got pretty much an unlimited availability of positions to put that dog in. And and then throw a Groomer's Helper on one corner of your table, you've got the ability to cross tie the dog. Safety is just, it's just about as safe as you could possibly get. All right. Well, I think that covers the lip system. Is there anything else that I'm forgetting?
No, I think you did a good job.
The grooming loops that Curtis has, they don't have the fixed ring in the front. The grooming loops that Chuck, the Groomer's Helper guy, makes has the fixed rings. It's a matter of what you like or what you don't like. I like the fixed rings, so I use Chuck's grooming loops on the lips. But Curtis also has the
Nick. I think Curtis now has a deluxe loop that has a sewn-in ring.
I'll have to see. Because he doesn't come to our show in Tacoma, so I never get to see him.
So, because I got one from him and it had a fixed ring, and it was pink, and I know a dog chewed it the other day, and I was just like, oh, no. Why do you get so attached to certain items? And Yvonne, my bather, was almost in tears when I showed her this tattered pink grooming loop with a fixed ring. Oh, my favorite grooming loop.
The other cool thing that Chuck has is he has two sizes of loops. He's got thick ones and little thin ones. And I've got some pretty tiny dogs. But that is really delicate for me and my little clipper issue for running the clippers into it. Yeah, I bit through my own one. I don't know how I do it, but I do it. All right, well, we all love to shop, and Amazon is one of our main sponsors, and so I'd like to just mention that you would really do a great thing to help the Groom Pod out if you guys used our banner on our website to do your Amazon shopping. You can do any kind of Amazon shopping. It doesn't have to be pet supplies. It can be pretty much anything you want to buy.
It takes you to pet supplies. The link takes you to pet supplies, but from there you can go anywhere. I bought two different bathtub mats from my shop through our Amazon link this week. I use it almost every week. I'm a shopper, dude.
Excellent. I myself bought X pipes for our new Mustang convertible that my husband's gonna put on. Woo-hoo! We got those through Amazon. Yeah, new toys. I just love it. So all you got to do is scroll down to the bottom and look for the Amazon banner. Click on it, and it will take you into the Amazon site. Like Barbara says, right now it's taking you right to pet supplies, but you can access the whole site from there. And the Groom Pod then gets just a little teeny tiny bit off of your sale to help support the show. And we really appreciate it also if you would rate and review us on iTunes. And I wanted to take a moment again to mention – that if you're having difficulties downloading the podcast, and it especially seems to be people who have iProducts, Macs and iPads, and if you're having problems, you might just want to go to iTunes and subscribe to our podcast. Then when you come home at the end of the day and you turn on your Wi-Fi, it will automatically look for the GroomPod show and download it so you have it ready to listen to the next day when you go out to work. So that works really well. And if you guys rate and review us, then it makes it easier for people to search for the GroomPod. So please rate and review us on both iTunes and Stitcher, whichever one you use. The definition du jour. So, the next subject we're going to talk about is our definition du jour. And I was on Facebook a few days ago, and I noticed that there was a pretty hot debate going on at the properties of optical brighteners. Can you tell us about optical brighteners?
Sure, I'd love to talk about optical brighteners because they're optical brighteners are chemical compounds that have kind of drifted from the laundry and paper making industries into the beauty industry for hair and makeup. And from the beauty industry, of course, they've drifted into the pet grooming industry. So there's a little bit of misinformation that's floating around out there about optical brighteners, and I'd like to clarify that. And so I'm going to kind of even read from my notes just to help us be very succinct.
Excellent.
So what's true about optical brighteners is that they are chemical dyes with names like disodium distaryl biphenyl disulfonate or disodium diaminostilbene disulfonate.
Okay, you always impress me with those big words.
Okay, well, I impress myself, and you know, like how I did that is that I wrote it out, like the really hard one was distaryl biphenyl disulfonate, but I got that. Distaryl.
Excellent.
Biphenyl disulfonate. You know, you just kind of break it down and then put it back together.
And well, you do a fabulous job with those big words.
Okay, so they're chemical dyes. They're fluorescent chemical dyes. They have chemical names, and they also are sometimes referred to in the kind of group trade names, and one of them that floats around a lot is Tinopal. So, they're called OBAs, optical brightening agents, or OFAs, optical fluorescent agents. They originated.
Okay.
They originated in the laundry and paper making industries. Almost all of the chemicals that we find in beauty products have other commercial uses in other industries, which is not a horrible thing. And they've drifted into the beauty industry, into hair products, makeup, and then into the pet world. They work by the use of fluorescence, specifically the conversion of invisible ultraviolet light into visible blue light. So that's not too different from blue pigment agents or bluing agents, which create more blue light. But these are just...
So these are primarily the two ways that whitening shampoos whiten, right?
Well, whitening shampoos have a number of things that they do. First of all, they deep clean to get rid of stains. And they do that either by use of strong detergent surfactants, or in the case of like Crystal White from Easy Groom, they use an enzymatic, a proprietary enzyme thing that eats the stain. So they deep clean, get rid of stains, and then they often use blue pigment to deposit on the hair shaft and reflect more light in the blue area. These optical brighteners are kind of the next generation of that. You know, they're not blue dyes per se, although they are kind of bluish, but they're fluorescent dyes that they, and so they have kind of a two-way process that's a little bit complicated to describe. So I'm not going to go there and just baffle you, but I'm just saying they're especially good. OBAs are especially good for reducing the visibility or perception of yellowing and enhancing the appearance of whiteness. And they have, in some cases, been combined in a hair product, especially conditioners, with silicones to increase brightness and shine. And Dow Chemical has actually combined silicones and optical brighteners into one single chemical that's called aminofunctional organosilicone optical brightener.
So, those chemists down at Dow, they're pretty amazing.
You know, they just work their butts off coming up with new stuff. And actually, optical brighteners and these silicone combined brighteners have been around for a couple of decades. I mean, I searched some patents, and they were back in 1986 and stuff like that. So another thing that's true about OBAs is that they're used in very small amounts, even a smaller amount than you would use a bluing agent. And they have been determined to be safe as used for human health and not an environmental hazard. As used, you would not want to dump a full barrel of OBA into a fish pond, but used in small amounts through some products that are then sent through a filtering process in the water treatment, they're safe for the environment. Now, what's not true? It is not true that optical brighteners deposit tiny particles of plastic on the coat. I don't know.
That is an odd rumor.
It's an odd rumor. It was actually stated in a seminar at Atlanta Pet Fair last weekend. And it's just simply not true. They're a chemical. They're not pieces of plastic in make. But so I tried to figure out how that might have come about, how somebody might have believed that optical brighteners were pieces of tiny pieces of plastic that are deposited in the hair. And this is one thing that I found, is that in makeup, like your foundation, OBAs are often present in microspheres as the delivery system. So microspheres, last week we talked about spherulites that were used in the Virbac oatmeal shampoo.
I remember. Oatmeal.
And the spherulite were teeny tiny, almost like micelle type conglomerates that circled around the active ingredient and then dissolved on the hair. Well, these microspheres dissolve on the skin and leave the brighteners. They're used to lighten dark circles under the eyes and stuff like that, kind of very specific makeup applications. So those microspheres might be part of someone thinking that tiny particles of plastic. And the term plastic in cosmetic chemistry doesn't refer to like hard plastics like we see drinking glasses and all like that. Plastic in cosmetic chemistry refers to the property of being moldable or flexible.
I thought so.
Yeah. So, microspheres.
Completely different definition than
It's not plastic as a stuff. It's plastic as a property. And microspheres with OBAs may have this property. I haven't totally nailed this down, but this is my suspicion, is that someone...
That makes sense, because, they would need to be pliable and or plastic.
Yeah. So, I mean, sometimes they say that they're thermoplastic microspheres. Thermoplastic means that they soften with heat, and then harden with cold. Well, heat could be simply the temperature of your skin. So
right.
that when applied to the skin, they melt. So,
or it could be the warm water in your bathtub.
But I have not found optical brighteners used for fabric or hair in the form of microspheres. I haven't run into that. There, it's usually just these chemical dyes, the Dinopal.
So maybe it's just a little bit of crossover information that was misdigested by the speaker or something.
Yeah, that's what I'm suspecting. And the other thing that's not true is that OBAs are not toxic, even though some humans have reported allergic response. So they may be sensitizers, but they're not toxins, they're not poisonous, they're not pieces of plastic. They're simply fluorescent dyes that diminish yellow and exaggerate the appearance of whiteness.
Do they work?
Yes. So, you know, like, there, I mean, the paper that I use to print my book on is extra white paper, and I'm sure that's it's got optical brighteners in it. There are shampoos that are made especially for blonde hair to diminish the yellow and make it brighter and lighter looking. They have optical brighteners in it. And optical brighteners, they don't fade as quickly as blue whiteners do. In fact, they may actually accumulate. And these optical brighteners that are combined with silicones, either two ingredients in one product, or in the case of Dow Chemical, two ingredients morphed into one, they increase shine and brightness and make all colors look better. So these amino functional organosilicone optical brighteners, I said that pretty fast.
You did. Woohoo!
They're probably more like what we find in, Show Season Shine uses, So Season, say that, it's my damn dentures.
But they look so good.
They do look good. They look a whole lot better than my rotten teeth were looking, I'm telling you. But
yeah.
Dang, you can't say Show Season. Show Season Bright shampoo uses optical brightener, and it's most likely an alchemical. It could be one of these organo silicone combined kind of things, and they make everything sparkle. They're not the risk of like white on white, Chris Christensen white on white, which uses a blue vegetable pigment, is that you can overdo that. It's very hard to overdo the optical brighteners. They don't turn the hair gray. And they're using lesser amount than the blue pigment. And so they're really kind of a lesser chemical.
So is there any risk of the accumulation?
I don't think so, because I don't think that they're, although they have been known to accumulate in fabric detergents, I haven't found any evidence of them accumulating in hair product. It just makes it brighter over time.
All right, well, there's our primer on optical brighteners. I hope that straightens out some of the misinformation that's been out there floating around. Thank you very much for that.
You're welcome.
Okay, now we're gonna hear from our WDPN network, and then we will move on to our At the Table section, which is special needs grooming.
Hey there, folks. This is Kevin Kessler, the owner and founder of the White Dragon Podcast Network. I'm sorry to interrupt the show you're listening to right now, but I wanted to take a very brief moment to tell you all about the other great shows found here on WDPN. The show you're listening to right now is one of 9 all-star podcasts designed to delight and entertain you all week long. Start your Mondays off with Mousellaneous Discussions, an in-depth Disney talk show focusing on a unique topic each week having to do with the Walt Disney Company. Every Tuesday is Two Men Tuesdays on WDPN with Two Men and the Mouse, a Walt Disney World podcast focusing on all the latest news and goings-on in the most magical place on Earth. On Wednesdays, we dive into the world of sports entertainment with Ring Ropes Radio, the pro wrestling podcast of WDPN. Thursdays allow you to get your game on with Boss Fight, a video game review show that dissects a new game each episode. Fridays are all about TV on WDPN. First, we have the Geek Watchtower, which reviews all the things that geeks watch, including but not limited to Arrow, The Flash, Doctor Who, Once Upon a Time, and so much more. And rounding out this Friday double whammy is Walker Talkers, the review show for the hit AMC drama series The Walking Dead, providing an in-depth analysis on every single episode of television's number one show. The weekends aren't forgotten, though. Kick back and enjoy your weekend with Bat Squad Radio, the pop culture power hour. Come along on a ride with the Bat Squad as they give you a view of the world of pop culture through geek-colored glasses. Those are just the shows produced by the network. We also have two all-star affiliate programs produced by outside talent. The Groom Pod by Susie the Groomer teaches you everything you need to know about the care and upkeep of the furry friend in your life. An actively distracted dialogue is a rip-roaring good time as Mikey Weisenhunt and his buddies humorously examine the world of modern popular culture. That's everything we have for now. For more information on these great shows, go to www.whitedragonpodcastnetwork.com. WDPN is also actively seeking additional affiliate shows for the network. If you have an awesome new idea for a podcast you'd like to have featured on the White Dragon Podcast Network, just send an email to kevin@whitedragonpodcastnetwork.com. Well, that about does it. Back to the show. Enjoy it, and thank you for listening to the White Dragon Podcast Network.
Okay, well, here we are at the table, and we're going to talk a little bit about special needs dogs. And what I mean by special needs dogs are primarily senior dogs or dogs with health issues, and occasionally dogs that have anxiety. Now, I will also add in dogs with aggression into this group. However, dogs with aggression I treat in a completely different manner, so I'm not going to discuss straight aggression and aggressive dog grooming in this section. We will, however, mention it when we talk about painful dogs. So I have, over the years, I worked at a vet hospital and I did a lot of special needs grooming. And I find it to be very rewarding for me. It's a little bit slower paced grooming. It's a little bit more thoughtful grooming, and it has a little less to do with the actual creative styling and scissoring aspect. And really, that's my weak point anyway. I do really good with taking care of the dogs. My grooming, maybe not the best. Some of the things we see in these dogs are health issues like bad knees, bad hips, bad elbows, bad back and neck from injuries or from their physiology. They were just constructed badly. We've all seen the Shih Tzus with the fiddle front or the bowed front or the bad hips, the bad shoulders, the painful arthritis as they get older, the weight issues that cause the painful arthritis. Sometimes there's heart problems. Sometimes there's a missing limb. Occasionally there's restricted sight or lessening hearing. And all of these cause for a little bit different approach to the grooming. Do you do a lot of grooming of special needs dogs?
I do special needs dogs. Did I ever tell you about the time that a man with a three-legged dog asked if he got a discount?
No. Boy.
And my response was, no, extra charge, special needs. So do I get a discount because he only has three legs? Oh no, you get extra charge with special needs.
Oh my gosh.
You know.
So sometimes you've got to really pull out of these people that they are special needs dogs. Other times people will just, it'll just come flowing out from them. So when I originally have the first phone contact with a special needs dog's owner, I try to get into a health discussion to find out exactly what's going on with the dog and if I have the ability to handle the issue. Then I'll ask them about their expectations for the dog's grooming, because I kind of want to get a feeling for what they're hoping. Because if they're hoping for a show poodle groom on a 17-year-old dog with seizures, it's just not going to happen. So by listening to what they're saying, I can kind of get a feeling as to what they're expecting me to be able to do with their dog and what their hopes for the grooming would be. And I also try to find out what their major concerns are. as far as having the dog in the shop or in my trailer, and what they're most worried about, and try to have a discussion, a back and forth on what their concerns are, and see how best to alleviate the concerns that the owners have. Do you have anything to add to that?
No, that's pretty much how I approach it too, and I'm just always very clear from the beginning that that I'm willing to compromise my styling expectations in order to make it easy on their pet. And most of the time, that's what they want to hear from me. And I also explain a little bit about how we go about it. I mean, in my case, I have an assistant who is very good at helping me work with an older, with a special needs dog. So we'll put two people on that dog. And we had a special needs brand new to us, Bichon, that came in last week. And it was a word of mouth reference. They had just moved from Portland to Tucson, and they have like a 15-year-old Bichon that's not doing well with its grooming. And it's one of these elderly dogs that is just like highly anxious over her grooming. So a customer of mine, they were talking about how are we ever going to find a groomer, and one of my customers said, oh, I know just who you need to go to, go see Barbara. And they came way across town, I mean 45-minute drive to get to me. And it was a very interesting grooming. It was a really cute little old Bichon, and we cage dried it with fans, and then Yvonne helped me groom her, and we did real well until we got to the front legs, and then the dog started kind of flailing and yipping a little bit, and they were afraid that the dog would bite us and get mouthy, but that really didn't happen. And I think it's because we took the extra time and patience with her, and I ended up scissoring that dog's legs over Yvonne's shoulders while she held the dog to her chest, and I leaned over her shoulder and did the legs that way, and you know, it was good enough.
Yep, good enough. That's a good point. There's just sometimes that you just do absolutely just what you can. Upon arrival, when the dog shows up at your shop, or when I go to the door and pick up the dog, the very first thing I'm going to do is get a phone number for right now. And that's not a phone number where you can leave a message and the owner will call you back, but a phone number where you can contact the owner. In my case, I'm parked out in front of their house, but I don't want to have to walk away from the dog. So I'm going to have a phone number that I can call, that they're going to have with them, that I can get the attention of the owner if I need them to come out to the trailer. I'm also going to have an emergency plan if something goes wrong. And that emergency plan is going to include what to do if there's an injury. Do you want me to go straight to the vet? Which vet do you want me to go to? Do you want me to come in and get you? Do you want me to call you while I'm on my way? Just kind of a basic idea of what to do if something should happen. And the third thing I do is make sure that the pickup contract is understood, in that if something goes wrong and I call you, you will come and get the dog right away if that's what has to happen, and you won't leave the dog in my care for any longer than it needs to be, because it's a special needs dog. So those are some of my when the dog arrives tips. Do you have any tips for when the dog arrives?
No, I just think it's just ultra important to be real clear, and I think you've covered it all. Do you ever have the people help you with the dog?
Yes. I definitely will have a person stay, depending on how the dog reacts to them. If the dog gets more anxious with them there, then I'll send them on their way. I always let them know that in advance. But I have no problem at all having someone in there that the dog is more comfortable with talking to the biting end while I'm working on the other end.
Yeah, I think that it was when I was, my 6 months of being a mobile groomer is when I got really comfortable working with people being present with their dogs. Because it can work out, and it can be helpful to the dog to have mom or dad there, and you just have to be able to, and I've said this before, I always have cat people stay with their cats. And I just teach them in 24 words or less how to help me.
Yep.
You know, I need you to not talk. I need you to not talk. I need you to just talk calmly to the pet. I need you to help me hold. I need you to hold the leg out while I get the armpit. I need, you know.
Yep.
You know, it's just real clear instructions, and a couple of times working with you like that, and they get to be very efficient assistants.
Yes, they do. You train them right, you've got help for life.
Yeah, and there are a few people that I would rather not have around, and you can pretty well tell. But when I was a mobile boy, I really leaned on the owners to help me out in certain situations with special needs dogs.
Yeah, I find them to be very, very helpful. I also find that it's really helpful to have certain equipment. One of the pieces of equipment I use and rely on the most in grooming special needs dogs is my over-the-table grooming support system, or LIP system, or there's other manufacturers. Some people use two grooming arms. That is not good enough for me. I need to have a full over-the-table LIP system so that I can use all of the accessories I have at my disposal, including hip straps, hammocks, front ties, just a groomer's helper as well. Anything I can do to make it more comfortable for that dog in its grooming.
I rely a lot on my LIP system. I don't know how I ever groomed without it, and I just wouldn't want to go back to that single loop system. You know, I like the shoulders, the belly strap. I love the three-piece flank strap. Don't use the hammock so much because I've got Yvonne to hold the dog.
Yeah, you're lucky there.
Yeah, if I were grooming alone, I would have my hammocks handy.
And the hammock is really good for doing feet, doing the pads and doing the nails and rounding the feet of dogs who are so poorly constructed that they are not comfortable standing on the legs that they have. So I put them up in the hammock, and it makes for a much more relaxing grooming visit for them. I also always, well, I can't really do it in the grooming trailer, but when I was in the vet hospital, I always made sure I had a good, comfortable, passive drying setup. A place where I could put a dog that needed a rest into a cage or a crate or a house or whatever, and put some passive fans on them and let them have a rest in between the time that I'm working on them. Sometimes a rest is really important for these guys.
We groomed the 15-year-old Bichon totally cage dried with fans, and then just gently fluffed up the coat. And I covered that with the owner at intake and said, you know, that's what we're going to do. I hope you're okay having it be a little fuzzy and curly. And of course they didn't care. They just wanted to know we're going to make it as easy for their old dog as possible. And another thing that I have on hand, likewise I would have with cats, is heavy welder's gloves, because you never know when one of these old anxious dogs is going to just lash out and get mouthy. So
yeah, it's true, especially if they hurt.
So what you want to do with a special needs dog, much like a cat, is have everything laid out that you might need, so that there's no groping around, there's no leaving, turning away from the table to get stuff. You just have it all at your reach. Gloves, muzzle if that's what you're going to use, whatever you think you might, you know, you may anticipate needing with that dog. And I have all my first aid supplies in a brightly colored plastic box at my table, so that I can just grab it, and if I have an accident, you just want to have it all at hand.
I also keep a mat on the top of the table, a little bit, an anti-fatigue mat to help the old guys stand. I also have an anti-fatigue mat in my bathtub for the dogs to stand on, just to make it a little bit easier on their little feet. You know, especially when you're taking perhaps an overweight senior dog and you're going to lift one foot up and that dog's going to be standing on the other three legs and it barely walks on all four legs. When you pick one up, it really stresses those other feet. Mm-hmm. So I find that having a mat is good. I also use hoodies and earplugs when needed. I make sure that I've got those set out beforehand, just like you said. And also my trimmers and my cordless clippers, in addition to my clipper back and my everything else, all set out and all ready to go. Sometimes those cordless clippers are a little bit easier to get around a dog that can't stand than the clipper back with its hose. So sometimes I'll defer to that. As far as special situations we're talking about, let's specifically talk about older dogs right now. And they have very much a sensitivity to both heat and cold situations. So when you're putting the dog in the bathtub, it is important not to use too warm water with these guys. You'll almost see them practically have a heat stroke. While standing in the bathtub, they'll get very lethargic, their head will hang down, they'll start to wobble around like they're drunk. And that's an indication of having a little bit too much warm water on some of these older dogs, and it sends them into kind of a stroke situation. Also, while they're in the dryers on the senior dogs, be careful not to use a heated dryer and step away from them. You got to really keep an eye on these guys because their systems are very sensitive. So do you have any special bath or drying tips with the old guys?
No, I think you covered it pretty well, Susie.
Yeah, this is kind of my area of expertise. This was about the easiest show for me to write. It just happened. So let's move on to skin issues with older dogs. So we know that they have thin skin. People have thin skin too when they get older, I think. I'm not there quite yet.
I can testify.
So while you're clipping them, and while you're clipping cats in general, and you want to really have tight skin. You don't want to have any loose skin while you're clipping, especially if you're using a vacuum system. That can be pretty hazardous. Also, you have to be a little bit more careful when you're brushing for brush burn because of the thin skin, especially on the light-coated dogs. They have even more sensitive skin as they get older. Also, we all know they've got hidden landmines all over the place. Warts and lumps and bumps and gooey stuff that just hides in their coat. And part of grooming a special needs or older dog means that you're not running your clippers blindly over the landmines and the warts and the stuff where you end up causing a lot of bleeding and a lot of itching later for the dog. And that's just part of age, is they get these yucky, nasty, weepy warts and stuff like that. You want to clean them up as best you can, but you do want to be careful when you navigate around them with your clippers. So one of the issues that older dogs face often is a loss of sight or diminished sight. Or you could end up getting a dog that was born blind. And these guys need a little bit of special treatment as well. For these dogs, smell is a really important component of their life. So when I'm approaching a dog that I know is sight impaired in any way, I always make sure that they can smell my hand first. Because when they smell me, they know what's going to happen, because that's what happens every time I show up. So if they were sighted before and then they've become less sighted, then just the smell will prepare them for what's going to happen, and it won't be quite such a shock to them. So I always say to move slowly around them and let them smell your hand. Another tip is to keep a hand on the dog so that they always know you're right there, because if they can't see you, maybe they can hear you okay, or maybe they can't, but it's reassuring to them to actually have physical contact with you at all times. It makes them a little bit more secure on the table.
I agree.
Also, restraint on the table is important for the sight-impaired dogs, because they don't know where the edge of the table is. So I stress again, 3 points of connection at least for special needs dogs. Connect up at the top of the grooming loop, connect in the front of the grooming loop, and then connect underneath their waist. Or you can connect the top of the grooming loop in between their legs and on their waist. Any way that you have 3 points of connection. And then again, with loss of sight, sometimes the noise really bothers them during drying, so hoodies and earplugs on these guys if they'll tolerate them. Some dogs, where they've lost their sight, will not tolerate hoodies and earplugs, but trying to mitigate some of that external noise, because their heightened sensitivity when they lose their sight is helpful for them to have a better, more pleasant experience. So speaking of hearing, sometimes you can get a dog that's lost its hearing, or perhaps a dog that has been born deaf. These dogs also, I like to keep facing me on the table so that they can see what I'm doing. If their sight is good, it just makes it for a more secure environment for them if they can see you. Also, again, I stress 3 points of connection on the grooming table, because these guys, just because they don't hear, sometimes they're a little less aware of where their feet are as well, and so I always keep them hooked up pretty tightly on the grooming table. I move slowly with dogs that can't hear, because sudden movements to a dog that can't hear can be very surprising. So in addition to keeping the dogs facing me, I move slowly, and if the dog is born deaf and I'm starting the dog early, I try to use hand signals at the grooming table that I repeat, and I try to go always in the same order so that the dog can anticipate what's going on.
I do that.
Yep. And I will say dogs learn well.
I'm pretty consistent systematically with all of my dogs, but I'm much more aware of being that with an older dog, because I want them to be able to anticipate what's happening next.
Yeah, it really helps them, once again, be more comfortable with the whole grooming experience. And the benefit of having a dog that can't hear is the dryer doesn't bother them nearly as much. So, you know, if you got to find a happy point, well, that would be it. They can't hear
that. Well, only if they're really totally deaf. If they're just partially deaf, I think sometimes the dryer bothers them more. I think that they have more internal kind of chinitis stuff going on that just roars where the dryer just sets off something.
Probably very true. I do notice a lot of dogs go into the barking seizures that are partially hearing dogs. Let's move on to dogs with heart problems. And we all know dogs, the easiest way to recognize a dog with a heart problem is that they are coughing consistently. One of the things that creates coughing is pressure on their abdomen. So with dogs that have a heart problem, I generally will not use a waist strap on them. I will, or I'll use half a waist strap. So I'll put the strap under one side and then through their legs, but not strap up the other side, because I don't want to put any additional pressure on their already bloated bellies and their lungs and stuff. The heart dogs also are on all kinds of medications, so they need potty breaks. Even if they're only in their shop for a couple hours, it's really a beneficial thing to take them out and to let them go potty, and also to let them have a little bit of water access. And that goes with all the senior dogs, really. Also, I try not to keep the heart dogs all day. I try to get them in and out in an express manner, because stress for a heart dog is a killer. And if they're nervous at the grooming shop at all, then you just want to kind of get them in and out as best you can. What do you think about that?
I agree. I wouldn't keep a dog longer than 2 hours with a condition like that.
Yeah, I think that and for seizure dogs as well. I like to keep seizure dogs as short as possible. So if I know that they are inclined, I will get them done start to finish in and out. Dogs that have missing limbs, it's important to use the support system and not just pick a foot up and expect them to stand there, because their muscles just aren't really set for that at this point. So let them rest in between their grooming as well. So if you've got a dog that has, say, missing a back leg, you know, work on the dog for a little bit and then let them sit for a while and work on the front leg. So kind of alternate back and forth, make it a little bit easier for him or her to sustain the grooming. It does take a while. It is stressful on them. And even though they do run around pretty well with just 3 legs, it is helpful if they can rest in between, make the grooming just that much more pleasant for them. And speaking of these missing limb dogs, their bodies get sore, like they're sore everywhere. And so are the badly constructed dogs, and so are the arthritic dogs. These dogs are far more likely to turn around and snap at you if they're uncomfortable. So I think, in my opinion, we need to be a little bit tolerant of that. You need to protect yourself. You need to have the dog attached in ways so that you're not getting bit. But I try not to get horribly offended by the dog trying to snap at me if I'm picking up the sore foot. And I really try to put my personal attitude in check with these guys, because by golly, they hurt. And sometimes when you pick up their foot, it hurts a lot. And sometimes we don't even know what the triggers are. So just use extra care when you're dealing with some of these really painful dogs. Look at the structure of the dog when it's wet. If it looks like it's badly constructed, you can figure when you go to try to pick that front leg up and bring it back for a nail trim that it may be very painful for that dog. So you may need to figure out a way to trim the nails while it's in a hammock, or trim the nails with the foot hanging over the edge of the table and lean down and get underneath it, just so that you can adapt for their odd structure. And, you know, do what you can to make it more comfortable for them. And then the last thing I'd like to talk about is just what you were mentioning earlier, is the dogs that have a little bit of senility, a little bit of confusion. These dogs really, really need to come in and out as fast as they possibly can, because they get very out of sorts when removed from their own environment. I do a lot of these dogs because I can do them right at their house. So I guess that is my coverage of special needs dogs. Do you have anything you'd like to throw in there?
I think you've covered it extremely well, Susie. Very good job.
Pat on the back for me. Okay, this week on Facebook, I asked our Facebook participants to post their most interesting special need client, and also what's the oldest dog they've groomed. So let's start out with you, Barbara. What's your most unique special need dog, and then what's the oldest dog you've groomed?
I have a little dog that I groomed this week with special needs, and his name is Mr. Bear. Mr. Bear, he doesn't have any physical disabilities, but he's a little strange.
Poor guy.
So he's afraid to be lifted from the floor. I'm the only person that he will allow to touch him in any way. So anybody that's ever worked for me, he will just like lunge and snap at them if they come within 3 feet of his leash. With me, I have to leave his leash on, and I can't lift him directly from the floor, but I have worked it out with him. Mr. Bear and I had him tell me, how can we do this? He will go to my table that I have lowered, and he will stand with his paws on the table, and he will then allow me to pick him up and either put him on the table or carry him to the tub. And I just have to keep his collar on him. His collar gets a bath every week. I don't take his collar off until we're on the finishing table and I have the grooming loop on him, and I'll take his collar off and groom around his neck. But I keep it on in the tub. I keep his leash on him in the crate at all times, and fortunately he doesn't chew it. And then I have this special way of picking him up where I let him walk to the table. And I, you know, like in this case, since I moved my table to another room, I had to have my bather Yvonne vacate the table because he wouldn't put his paws up on it with a golden doodle on the table. Had to get rid of it, and then other people have to move away because he won't let me handle him if there's other people that he thinks they're in arm's reach of him. So that's pretty special needs, you know. They one time they got angry at me because I couldn't fit him in on an emergency basis, and they took him to PetSmart, and it lasted for 10 minutes.
Oops.
they got the call.
Okay, what's the oldest dog you groomed?
I think 24 years old poodle.
Wow,
That was impressive. And the, you know what, and it was a cool dog. And what was cool about that dog is that she stayed in pretty good shape until the very end, and then it was a quick slide. That's almost cat-like. You know, cats have the advantage of they kind of hang on pretty well until the last lap, and then and that's the way I would like to go.
Yeah, you know, me too.
This slow degeneration sucks. I mean, I'll tell you.
Yeah.
Okay, so that was mine. What else? What did other people say?
Debbie Sheroy says, my current oldest groom is a 20-year-old cat who is mean as heck. I've been grooming her for 9 years, and the owner won't take her anywhere else. I don't mind grooming her because I know how to handle her. My special needs groom would be the 120-pound Chesapeake Bay Retriever with bad knees. He can't stand up, and he has been refused by other groom shops because he can't stand. I love this dog. I let him lay on the floor while I clip him all over with a one comb, and I get lots of kisses. he's one of the sweetest dogs I've ever had, and I'm happy to have him as a client. And that is exactly what we're talking about here, is paying attention to what the dog is telling you, like you said, and adjusting your grooming around the comfort of the dog. So Brenda Mendez says, I did a 20-year-old cat, opted to skip the bath. She was quite feisty for an old gal. Real sweet when we held her, not so sweet on the table. And then Carrie Spence Bernhardt says, I do an 18-year-old Bichon. I don't use the dryer nozzle, and I don't worry about getting his face completely dry. So those are what our friends around the world said about special needs grooming and about old pets. Well, it's probably that I've wrapped it up, because I think we're running long. Gee, for a change. If it drives you crazy that we're running a little bit long, please let us know, because somehow I feel like this will be more of a constant than an occasional thing.
We've got a lot to say.
Yeah, we do have a lot to say. That'll wrap it up for the Groom Pod. See you guys next week. Bye-bye.
Bye now. Bye, Susie.
Bye-bye, Barbara. Well, stylists, it's time to sweep up the hair, clean out the tub, and turn out the lights on another episode of the Groom Pod. Remember to join the discussion group and be part of the show by liking us on Facebook at The Groom Pod. You can find Barbara online at groomblog.blogspot.com and at her shopping site, www.shop.bbird.biz. You can email me at Susie, S-U-S-Y, at thegroompod.com, or Barbara@thegroompod.com. Please tell all your friends about the show and leave comments and reviews anywhere that you can. And also, please support the sponsors of the show. They make it possible for us to continue on. So on behalf of Barbara Bird and myself, thanks for listening, and see you real soon.
This has been a production of the White Dragon Podcast Network. For information on this, as well as our other great podcasts, check us out on Facebook at facebook.com/WD Podcast Network, email us at WDPodcastNetwork@gmail.com, and follow us on Twitter at White Dragon PN.